Judge Bishop of the Court of Appeals. And with that, Mr. Fraser, good morning to you.
May it please the court. Good morning, Judge. My name is Greg Fraser. I represent Westgate Bank. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The question before the court today is, does the bank's decision not to pursue a deficiency judgment preclude it from exercising its rights in its remaining deeds of trust? The answer is no. As this court affirmed in Mutual Bank versus Mirante, the statutory framework which governs deficiency action does not preclude or prohibit a creditor from exercising its rights in its remaining collateral loan documents. In the case of Mirante, a guarantee, in this case, a deed of trust. The facts of this case are not in dispute. The Doty's executed 3 promissory notes in favor of the bank, and 3 deeds of trust secured those notes. Now, it's important to note that the deeds of trust and promissory notes were cross-collateralized, meaning that each deed of trust secured each promissory note. The Doty's defaulted on 1 of the 3 promissory notes, and the bank chose to exercise its power of sale on 1 of the 3 deeds of trust.
Could it have exercised the sale as to one of the other properties, too, to be sure it paid the full balance?
Yes, the bank could have exercised its right to foreclose more than just the 1 deed of trust at the time of the first foreclosure.
If it had done that and a sufficient amount was collected and, in fact, there was excess, I believe the note allows for the excess to be applied to other balances owed by the Doty's, correct?
Yes, Judge. The deeds of trust would allow, if 2 properties were foreclosed, if 2 deeds of trust, the power sale were exercised, the bank could have utilized the proceeds and applied it across the 3 notes as the bank saw fit.
And if that had been done, would there have ever been a determination as to the fair market value on the old Cheney property?
No, Judge. There would not. Following the application of the proceeds of the trustee's sale, the bank was left with roughly $44,000 balance on the defaulted note, which remained secured by the 2 remaining deeds of trust. The Doty's filed a declaratory judgment action after the bank chose not to proceed on a deficiency judgment. The declaratory judgment action asked the court to determine, essentially, that the defaulted note was extinguished because of the failure to obtain a deficiency judgment, and that the bank was precluded from proceeding on its remaining deeds of trust.
Let me back up here on the facts. I think your introductory remarks, you said all the notes and all the deeds were, cross-referenced.
Yes, Judge, cross-collateralized.
That suggests they were completely symmetrical. Is that the case?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Judge.
That every note pertained to each of the three properties?
Each of the 3 properties, the 3 deeds of trust, secured the total balance on each of the notes. So that...
And is there complete symmetry with respect to the individuals?
The individuals on the notes and deeds of trust?
That's not the case.
That's not the case. The 148...
Okay, so it's not a complete symmetry in the whole business.
The deed of trust that was foreclosed was executed by Owen and Joy Doty's son and daughter-in-law. But all of the promissory notes were executed by Owen and Joy Doty. And I think that's the key here.
Owen and Joy are not on the old Cheney deed, though.
Not on the deed of trust, and that old Cheney deed of trust is the one that was foreclosed.
Okay.
And the proceeds apply
to... Owen and Joy are on everything, but they're not on the old Cheney deed. Is that correct?
That's correct, Judge. Okay. Following the institution of the declaratory judgment action, the parties agreed that we had 2 notes, 1 note that was defaulted, and that the bank claimed was secured by the 2 remaining deeds of trust, and 2 notes that were not in default, but that were maturing. And the parties agreed that the Doty's would pay off those 2 notes and get a release of the 2 remaining deeds of trust in a collateral exchange where they would give a security agreement to the bank in a deposit account in an amount necessary to cover the balance of the defaulted note plus 1 year's interest at the default rate. The district court determined that the bank's failure to establish a deficiency judgment precluded it from exercising its rights in its remaining collateral documents, now the security agreement substituted for the deeds of trust, and that that essentially meant that the balance of the defaulted note was extinguished. The district court relied heavily on 76-1013, which is the statutory framework which instructs how a deficiency judgment is to be obtained. The district court's determination was flawed for two reasons. The first is that 76-1013 is inapplicable to the bank's exercise of its rights on its remaining collateral documents. The second is that the bank's remaining collateral loan documents, the deeds of trust, and then the security agreement, are subject to separate specific statutes of limitation and not governed by the three-month statute of limitations set out in 76-1013. This court found in First National Bank of Omaha versus Davey and in Sports Courts versus McGinnis that the legislature created a special cause of action which allows a creditor to sue a borrower on an underlying obligation following a trustee's sale. The ability to do that, to impose personal liability on the borrower, is governed exclusively by 76-1013. The bank is not seeking a deficiency judgment. The bank is seeking to enforce its rights on its remaining collateral loan documents. Just as this court held in Mutual of Omaha Bank versus Mirante, that 76-1013 does not constrain a creditor's right to proceed on its collateral loan documents, in that case a guarantee, 76-1013 does not constrain the bank's right to proceed on its remaining collateral documents. Because those documents have not been foreclosed by a statute of limitations, and those documents guarantee the payment of the defaulted note. Even, not only is 76-1013 inapplicable, but even if it had some application, the district court erred because it applied a three-month statute of limitations effectively to the security agreement and the bank's deeds of trust. The deeds of trust are subject to five-year statute of limitations if foreclosed extrajudicially, and 10-year statute of limitations if foreclosed judicially. Similarly, a security agreement as a written contract is subject to a five-year statute of limitations. The district court incorrectly assumed or reasoned that because the statute of limitations on the underlying defaulted note had expired and the bank was precluded from suing on that note, that it was similarly precluded from exercising its rights in its collateral loan documents. This court has already rejected that reasoning in Omaha Savings Bank versus Cimarron and in J.I. Case versus Thomas. In those cases, the court found that although the creditor was prohibited from proceeding on an action on the promissory note, it was not prohibited from proceeding on a mortgage because the mortgage statute of limitations is longer, 10 years, than a statute of limitations on a note.
The appellee, I think, argues that without a fair market determination, somehow the creditor and the bank will somehow, a lending institution, will take advantage of the creditor. What is your response to that?
Well, Judge, that's not the facts in this case. But even if it were, if the court is concerned with that, the fact of the matter is the legislature has seen fit to create a statutory framework in which banks and borrowers may enter into deeds of trust which allow the bank to foreclose extrajudicially. And that requires notice and public sale in which people come in and are allowed to bid and determine the price at which that property will be sold. This is the same as this court found in Mirante, where a guarantor argued the same thing. Hey, fair market value. I should get the benefit of that. And this court found, you have executed a separate contract that guarantees payment of the note, and the bank is not proceeding for a deficiency action on the note, in which case it would be constrained by the framework of 76-1013. But if the bank is not, if the bank is proceeding on a collateral contract, it can sue on that contract. In this case, it could foreclose its deeds of trust. It could sue to enforce its security agreement and is not constrained by the issue of fair market value, which does protect debtors. And the legislature saw fit to include that protection for debtors in the case where the bank is proceeding for a personal judgment against the debtors following a trustee sale. Seeing no further questions, we would ask that the court overturn or reverse the district court, and I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lenowski, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Joel Lenowski. I represent the appellees in this case, Owen, Joy, Ron, and Angela Doty. It is our position that the lower court, District Court of Lancaster County, correctly applied the provisions of the Trust Deed Act, specifically Section 76.10.13. The particular facts of this case when it concluded that the bank's failure to bring the action within the limitation period set forth in the statute resulted in the debt being time barred and resulted in value of the proceeds from the old Cheney property sale determined payment in whole of that underlying note.
Counsel, I'd like to enable you to concentrate on that argument. I'd like to clear away a little bit of brush. If we disagree with the argument that 76.10.13 extinguished the note, if we disagree with that, would you agree or concede that the collateral agreement that was substituted would be applied to the remaining debt on the note? We don't have to go into who signed what and all of that.
Hopefully I understand your question correctly.
Right.
But if the Trust Deeds Act is not applicable to this case, then I think we would have probably an entirely different argument. I think the debt would survive. I think there would not be a requirement to determine what the debt is. That is the crux of this case.
Right. That helps, I think, that we don't have to deal with those subsidiary issues. We can focus solely on the claim that was upheld by the district court.
Exactly. And, Judge, I agree. And I think that is entirely the focus of this case.
All right, thank you.
That's why this case was filed. This was a declaratory judgment action filed by the Doties following a trustee sale of the old Cheney property. And it was filed, and as the record, and I think Mr. Schlin's deposition, which is Exhibit 3 of the record, shows and indicates that this case was filed after that sale when the bank unilaterally and simply concluded, here's what you now owe us. We sold your property under the Trust Deeds Act, and now we, the bank, have decided you owe us some $44,000. And we're going to tack that on to other notes that you have with us. That's not the proper application of the law. There is no question, but this case is smack dab in the middle of the Trust Deeds Act. And the crux of this case is, did the bank follow the Trust Deeds Act by seeking an adjudication of what the balance was of the underlying obligation for which that deed of trust was taken? And that's required under Section 76.10.03. And it's directly on point.
So what is the significance of the clauses in each one of the trust deeds that say this covers all the collateral?
I think it does. And Mr. Frazier referred to the collateral agreement and subsequent security agreement, substitution of collateral agreement, which was executed by the Doties. And in those documents, we still took issue with what was owed. I think the key here is the determination of what is owed, did the court or did the bank properly take the steps in order to establish that? And I'm sorry if I answer your question. I'm not sure if I...
Let me take a stab at it. I think your opponent has argued that all of the debts were cross-collateralized by all of the deeds of trust. There's no dispute about
no
that.
No dispute, no.
All right, thank you.
And again, they were. And if there's a debt owed... these other properties, or initially the Harwood and Star Street properties, would secure that debt.
So, and Mr. Lodowski, as I asked Mr. Frazier, the bank could have sold the Star or Harwood property right to satisfy this note 257.
They could have.
And if they had, and there was plenty of money to cover that note, and there were excess funds, and they could apply it to the other notes, would there have been a required fair market value determination?
I think requirement is necessary to determine what the accurate and actual balance due on the underlying notes is, and I think it's required to determine whether or not those properties were sold for fair market value. So yeah, I think it would be required no matter what. Now again, I think the statute specifically says that to determine the balance due for the underlying note for which the deed of trust was taken.
So if there would have been no balance due, would it not apply?
I still think it applies, because you have to determine what the balance is. Now, because let's say, for example, hypothetically, the bank says, okay, we feel that there is more owed on these notes, and the consumer says, no, you're adding on trustees' fees, attorney's fees, and whatnot. I still think you have to have that action under 76-1013 to determine what the obligation is for the underlying debt, and that's the key.
That's where you would start.
That's where you would start, yes. And again, as we read
and then,
all...
And then you'd look at this basket full of properties and say, here's where I'm going to get it.
Well, and I think you look at the sale. If those sales take place, you have to look at the sales. Keep in mind, and as I read the culmination of cases that deal with the Trustees Act, they all make the distinction between a non-judicial foreclosure and a foreclosure, an actual foreclosure, which is a judicial proceeding, which has judicial oversight in the form of a confirmation sale. When you do your confirmation sale, all your cards are on the table. Here's what the property was sold for. Here's what the expenses were. Here's what we're thinking is still owed. And the court oversees all of that. Trustees Act says we're going to give banks and lenders another option, a quicker, a easier, a less expensive non-judicial remedy to have you to allow you to do a trustee sale. However, there still has to be that judicial oversight. You have to come back, bank, within 30 days to determine what the balance is due under that underlying obligation is. You have to do that because there needs to be some judicial oversight, and that's the key in this whole case.
Counsel, maybe it would help if we sort of were to simplify the facts in a hypothetical. You have a single borrower. You have a single lender. There's a single note for, we'll say, $100,000, and you have two deeds of trust, both of which are given by the single borrower to the single lender to secure the promissory note for $100,000. The lender exercises the power of sale in the first deed of trust and realizes $60,000. Doesn't seek to enforce the debt, waits 6 months, pursues a power of sale on the other deed of trust. Is it permitted to do that?
I don't think so. If there's a question as to the validity of the $60,000 they're claiming is still owed, or the balance that is still owed, I think the bank is required to have a judicial determination as to what the balance is of the underlying debt. That's specifically what 76-1013 provides for. It's easy if it's one to one. Okay, if you got one piece of property and one deed of trust, and one,
right?
You know, that's simple. You sell the property, and the bank says, okay, here's what is owed, and we're going to sue you for it because X amount is owed. I don't think it makes a difference whether there's one, two, three, or four properties, because you still have to make the determination as to what was the fair market value of that property that was sold. That's the key.
What in 76-1013 requires the lender to bring an action? It says an action may be commenced if a borrower is dissatisfied with the sale. Couldn't they likewise bring the action?
Well, they could, but I don't think it's the burden of the lender or the borrower to do that. I think the burden, the obligation is under the, and I think that's the intent of the trustees.
Well, if it says Justice Castle's example sets forth, if the suggestion is that the $60,000 is insufficient and the lender is still holding another property as collateral, wouldn't it be incumbent upon the borrower to take some action?
Well, again, this is our case, and this is the case of first impression. But I think under that scenario, it's still the obligation of the lender to establish what the fair market value of the property was. This act was created for the protection of the borrower to prevent the unscrupulous sales that historically take place. You see in the movies with the mortgage holder coming in and taking the family farm. The case law talks about the use of straw men. That was all... Those are the problems that this act was intended to address. And you know, as indicated in the McGinnis Sports Course versus McGinnis case, and I love this quote, when you use the Trustees Act to sell collateral, you took the act, in that case, took the act, with beauty, blemishes, and whatever may be good or not so good in the act, including the 3-month statute of limitations. If the banks want to have the easy way out and use the trustee's sale that doesn't have judicial oversight for the sale itself, you've got to come back and have the judicial oversight which is required in Section 76.10.13. Without that, the banks are free to do whatever they want, like in this case, where they decide, here's what you owe. We're going to tell you what you owe. Oh, and in this case, by the way, it changed on various days. And if you look at the Richland's affidavit, there are different amounts they're claiming were owed. That's what 76-1013 avoids. It makes the decision as to what is owed up to the court, not to the bank. We can sit here and talk about the bank securing or pursuing its claim from the collateral. The question is, what is the claim? That's why we have 76-1013. The court determines what that claim is, not the bank. For those reasons, we would ask the lower court affirm the lower court's decision. Hearing other questions, thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
We have 23 seconds.
23 seconds, Mr. Frazier.
Thank you, Judge. Mr. Lanowski opened and closed with, the Trust Deeds Act is meant to prevent the bank from unilaterally determining what you as the borrower owe. That's not the case here. There was a trustee sale, a third party bid $100,000, and there's no dispute that there was remaining owing then on the balance, roughly $44,000. And the bank didn't say, now borrowers, you owe us that money. It said, we have additional collateral, just like a guarantee, that secures the payment of those sums. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for today. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.